Hey, you guys, welcome to Regardless. I am so excited to have you here. Regardless is the go-to hub for tips and tools to keep you going, babe, reminding you that you've got this. Ready?
Meg.
Hello. How are you, Skylar?
So good. This is such a cool full circle moment for me because when I graduated college, which was like so crazy, 4 years ago,
the Congrats.
Thank you. I mean, it's been a whirlwind, but the first book that I read upon graduating was The Defining Decade, thanks to my dad.
Nice. Way to go, Dad. Love
right?
it.
Right? And it really changed the game for me. So, Meg, I just want to thank you for...
You're welcome. That's why I wrote it.
Well, Meg J, welcome to Regardless. So I'm very...
Awesome. Yay! I love it.
Yes, I always like to do a little intro. So I think just knowing really your mission and what you're creating, there's such an alignment with my mission as the host of Regardless. Because, you know, I graduated college and I'm like, what in the world? Like, I feel like my network and my parents, my mom is a marriage and family therapist and my dad is an executive team coach. And so I've been equipped with a lot of, you know, like mindsets, resources, support that I know a lot of 20 somethings don't have the privilege in their life to have. And so I want to be hopefully that voice for my generation to share that I've got you through this. And I'm so happy to bring on incredible guests like yourself to really share what those answers are to some of our most burning questions. So Meg J, welcome. Meg
J,
yes. Meg J is a clinical psychologist and author. She is famous for her work on adult development, specifically to 20-somethings, particularly with her best-selling book, The Defining Decade, Why Your 20s Matter, and really how to make the most of them. She advocates for taking intentional steps in your 20s to shape a fulfilling and a meaningful life, and really emphasizing why it's so important that we really see this as a pivotal decade and personal and professional growth. And welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Well, our missions are aligned because the whole reason that I write books is I'm a clinical psychologist. It's really cool that people are talking about therapy now, but therapy is not accessible. It's not affordable. It's not scalable, especially not good therapy. Mm-hmm. So I've been writing books for a bunch of years now from the defining decade, which you mentioned. My most recent is the 20-something treatment, which speaks more directly to young adult mental health. But it's really because I, like you, think there's a lot of great information and advice out there, but maybe it's not out there enough. So that's where books and podcasts and, you know, TikTok and whatever comes in.
I love it. And you are a mother. Do you have 20 somethings?
You know, I do not, but I will eventually. It's funny because when the first edition of The Defining Decade came out, was 2012, and they were literally in preschool. And now the second edition came out in 2021. And then I just sent my oldest, I have two kids. My oldest just went to college. So it's so weird that eventually they are going to collide with the space where I've been working for all this time. And it's funny because their friends are starting to send pictures of, oh my God, I'm reading your mom's book. It's just so funny. Well, because when I would be on a radio interview 15 years ago, they'd say, well, Dr. J, what are your kids doing? You know, seeing if they're like living in the basement and not working. And I was like, well, they're in preschool. So, you know, they are kind of living in the basement. But anyways, now it's all colliding, which
the pressure's on.
That's right.
Yeah.
They better not screw it up.
Oh my God. No, that's so cool. And the fact that like your kids and their friends get access to this. And I think for them to share that with the world, and when it comes from a 20-something who's experiencing all of this and the unknown, it's so much more powerful, like the word of mouth when it really resonates, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, that has definitely been the deal with my book, which is what I want I'm going to get into like way too much inside baseball with like publishing or whatever, because I'm like super interested in that. So tell me to hush anytime you want. But when the defining decade was first, sort of like being sold to for a publisher to buy it, some publishers said, "Oh, well, we'll buy it if you write it for the parents." And I said, "Have you read the proposal? Do you understand me at all? That, the last thing that I want to do is to talk to a bunch of parents of 20 somethings. I work every single day with 20 somethings themselves. I almost never talk to their parents because this is really about how to claim your own life." And so anyway, it has been true that the book has done really well and definitely exceeded everyone's expectations, and almost entirely from word of mouth, because it doesn't get the press that the book, because people are like, "Oh, 20 somethings are broke, they can't buy books, that's not where the money is." But that's where my work is, so that's what I do, and it's really been very much word of mouth that people will say, "My friend told me about it," or sometimes my mom or dad told me about it. But I
I
love
mean,
that.
yeah. I mean, my dad
Yeah,
gave it to me, but that was
I
like one of
love
the
it.
best gifts that I've ever received. And what it is, which I love that you just said, is really taking claim and like radical responsibility over your life and your future. And
Right.
that is really like the essence of regardless. Like, whatever, regardless of what comes your way or what life throws at you or navigating the uncertainty, which is so freaking scary, it's like the responsibility and the accountability is on us for how we want to show up and take charge and really claim our life. And so, Meg, I think starting us off, like, why did you write the book? Like, what was your source of inspiration? Did it stem from your experience being in your 20s, or what was the catalyst?
Yeah, it really did not. I mean, I was a 20 something and my 20s look a lot like they do now, minus the social media.
Totally.
No, I was in grad school at Berkeley, clinical psych, working with a bunch of different age groups. I think I originally thought I would want to work with kids, and I tried it and it was heartbreaking. I just wanted to adopt everybody, which wasn't going to be possible on
Possible.
my graduate student salary. So I just found that too frustrating and upsetting, that you often, like, kids can't, they don't have as much agency as a 20 something. So, I was working with different age groups at school in Berkeley. Berkeley is obviously a college town filled with young adults, so I had a lot of them. And I realized right around the time research was starting to talk more about, hey, there's this period of time within adult development that we never talk about. We talk about midlife, we talk about old age, but we never really talked about young adult development and really the unique developmental opportunities there. I mean, historically, that space had really just opened up because, back in the 50s, everybody was married by then and they had kids and mortgages. But now, obviously, things are different. There's this new space and people are trying to figure out, well, what do we do with it? So, all that just kind of came together for me when I was in grad school, realizing, if you really want to help somebody, help them early on in the trajectory of their adult life, that I get to get in front of all these big decisions that are just right around the corner for people, of choosing partners and careers and cities, and that it was a lot easier to get people into a good life than get people out of a bad life. So I started working in that space, and then back to what I said earlier, there's only 30 or 40 hours a week to help people one-on-one, 1 hour at a time, which is just the least efficient way possible to help people. So I became frustrated with that really quickly and realized, somebody needs to write a book on this, and I guess it might as well be me. So.
I love that. What do you think makes our 20s like the defining decade?
It's not what I think. It's what I know, what the research shows. So I'll rattle off some data points for
Give
you.
it to
But
me.
your brain is going through your last growth spurt in your 20s. So your brain is able to sort of change and kind of make yourself into that adult person you're going to be. So personality changes more in your 20s than any time after. Your learning curve in your 20s, and I mean usually at work, predicts your earning curve in your 30s and beyond. About 50% of people have met or married, if that's your jam, their partner by the age of 30. 30, average age of first child is 30. You know, even for the things that are happening later, like career contentment hovers around 32, but you don't start your career at 30. All that starts in your 20s. So, you know, fertility really starts to take off in your 20s and then, of course, doesn't last forever. So that's something to think about in your 20s. So there's just so much happening developmentally that is not happening in the same way, you know, certainly by your mid-30s and beyond. So it's really the time to get in there. You know, the metaphor I always use is working with 20-somethings, it's like working with planes just after takeoff. And you can just make a small course correction that ends up having a really big impact on where somebody ends up 5 or 10 years down the line. So 20-somethings are, I mean, so much is in flux, which is really hard for you, but really easy for me, because then we have so much to work with that so much is still undecided. So you can get fr in front of a lot.
It seems like there's lots of flexibility for you to work with, which is super exciting. And I always say this on the podcast, it's like even looking at who I was 1 to 2 to 3 years ago, it's like
Oh,
almost looking at a different person.
it's huge. I mean, you will change more from 20 to 30 than in any other 10-year span in your adult life. And, you know, childhood's all in the rearview mirror now anyway. I mean, that's, you know, I sometimes, you know, clients look at me and they're like, "Do you think I can change?" And I, you know, it's impossible not to change. You are going to learn and grow and change. And all the research shows that in general, that growth and change is headed in a positive direction across your 20s and your 30s. So a lot of my work is very normalizing and optimistic around the, you know, my most recent book, The 20-Something Treatment, especially is that it's really, really normal to struggle in your 20s. Doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. Doesn't mean you have a mental health disorder. Even if you do, doesn't mean you'll have that forever. That we know that career improves, mental health improves, relationship improves, life satisfaction improves. I mean, most parts of your life are going to improve across your 20s and your 30s and your 40s. That's the good news. The bad news is that means that where you are in your 20s might be kind of tough. Because, you know, people hear like, "Oh, my 20s are going to be the best years of my life." You know, I say if that turns out to be true, something has gone terribly wrong. Because what I want to help people do in their 20s is sort of lay the foundation to, sure, be happy now if you can, but also how to have life get better and better as you go.
I love this. It's so interesting because you hear a lot of parents, not that this is how I was raised, but this is just what I'm hearing around me, how people are like, oh my gosh, college are the best years of your life. And
What is wrong with these people? Like,
it's
seriously,
weird.
stop. Stop
I
saying that.
agree.
Yeah, I gave a talk at UVA this summer to parents. I don't honestly don't know why they asked me to give it to the parents, because really I should have been giving it to the students, but I just do what
Because
they
they need
tell me. Right.
it
I just do what they tell me. So I was giving a talk to the parents and I said, "Please do not tell your child that these are going to be the best 4 years of your life. A, they probably won't be, and
No.
B, I hope they're not. So just stop." But yes, I mean, we get, you know, people say it about college, they say it about their 20s. I think we really idealize, look, I don't, but other people
No.
idealize looking back, like what it's like, oh, not to have a marriage or a mortgage or any kids or big career. But I think they've forgotten what it feels like not to have those things and not to know if you ever will. That's hard. That's not,
It's
that doesn't
hard.
feel like the best years of your life.
No, and I think what I mean, everything that you're branding and you're creating and what you're an expert in is how to navigate the unknown. And that is so scary. I mean, for me specifically, knowing that I have an amazing support system and I am pretty confident and I feel like I have a good understanding and sense of self, and I know that that's constantly evolving. And I do take radical responsibility and accountability over my life and the decisions that I make. But even with having all of that, it's still so overwhelming, stressful, even knowing like, how do I know that I'm on the right path? And like, what is really the measurement of success in our 20s? Like, how do we know that we are doing the right things?
Well, that's where, I mean, and here's where the radical responsibility really goes to the radical next level is you decide your own measure of success. And I think that's, it's very normal of people go through school, maybe college their whole life. There's been like a clear rubric of like what's an A, what's a B, what's a
Yes.
C. It's decided for you. And then suddenly it's like, whatever an A is, it depends on you. So for one person, an A might be, I want to teach surfing in Hawaii. And for another person, it's going to be, I've got to get that consulting job at Bain, which somehow everybody now has decided is the only definition of having an A. But that is part of the radical responsibility is deciding, what does it mean to me to get an A in my 20s or, whatever success in my 20s? And then remembering what you said, because it's very hard not to be like, oh, but somebody else has got this other thing. Maybe that's really an A. But that's, I'm not saying this is easy, but that's the work of being in your 20s is realizing like the only person who defines success or should be defining success for you is you. In the defining decade, it's a lot about, feeling urgency around that and realizing that your time is valuable, but it's not about like what kind of success is, I'm not telling someone this kind of work or that kind of
No.
whatever, have a family, don't have a family. It's really not about what as much as about how and why.
Yeah, I think that's super special because success is unique to like your soul's blueprint. And I mean, to anyone who's listening right now, like just because someone wants to start their own company or become an entrepreneur, like doesn't mean that that equals success. And I think
Right.
as 20 somethings living in today's age, where everything that we're seeing is on social media, for me, speaking especially as a young woman,
Right.
whether it's about my career or how many followers I have or the way my body looks or, oh my gosh, she's getting married or they're having a kid already. Like all
Right.
of these like almost reminders are like are triggers to us in a way. And it's like, ugh.
Absolutely. I mean, here's the good news is, I mean, the bad news is like that is totally the deal with your 20s. And I don't really know how to make that go away other than to talk about it and say, like, compare and despair. And your brain can't help it because of the uncertainty. Your brain's trying to figure out, am I okay? Am I not okay? Am I doing it right? Am I going to survive? Am I going to procreate? Like your brain, your evolutionary brain is trying to like make sure. So, okay, fine. Your brain can't really help this. The good news is once you create or find or put together that, sense of purpose or that job you're getting excited about that, that you're liking or even loving, or that person you're either liking and even loving, that city you're liking and even loving, once you really start going on that, you stop comparing so much because you're like, I'm good. I'm happy. I like what I'm doing. That's cool that person's a doctor, or that's cool that person started a company, but I actually don't want that. And I really like what I'm doing. So once you do get there, then that kind of stops. Or I guess I feel bad for older adults who are still doing that. But I think if you sort of set up your life in a way that you're like, hey, I really love what I'm doing, you stop comparing yourself to other people. But it's just normal when, most people in their 20s have the worst jobs they're ever going to have. They have the worst finances they're ever going to have. They're the loneliest they're ever going to be. So during those years, of course, you're going to look around and be like, am I doing this right? Like, is there a better way? And that's just part of the eternal 20-something struggle.
Oh, I feel it. I mean, I always say like this is the brokest I'm ever gonna be.
Right. I mean, so I think we have to remember that, the defining decade is really about, making defining moves. It's not about sort of everything coming to fruition, like, oh, everything's got to be like figured out at 30. That is definitely and explicitly stated in the book, like not the message of like, if you don't do it by 30, it's too late. It's just more that you make a lot of defining moves in your 20s that end up coming to fruition, usually in your 30s, and then obviously compound from there. But yeah, you probably aren't going to have everything you want by 30. And that's okay.
And it is interesting, like Meg, just from your experience, like what are some of the most common misconceptions or themes that you're seeing by 20 somethings that maybe hinder their personal growth and ability to step into like a more self-assured person by the time they're 30?
Gosh, I'm sure I could have a neat list if I had that thought in advance, but some I can just riff on. Well, one
Love
is
it.
that the compare that these are supposed to be the best years of my life. Okay. Empirically speaking, they're truly not. Their mental health, happiness, life satisfaction kind of follow a J curve throughout life. So they're, pretty high when you're a kid. Take a downward slope, of course, no big shocker across your teenage years. Sorry, bottom out in your 20s. But then the good news is somewhere in there, they start to turn up, for the better and then go upward from, the rest of your life. I mean, truly, like even, nobody can imagine how on earth older people are happy, but believe it or not, they're happier than 20 somethings because it's like they've had their life. They know what they feel good about. They know what does matter, what doesn't matter, which is just does a lot for your mental health. But anyway, so one myth is that your 20s are going to be the happiest, best years of your life. They're not. And they shouldn't be. I mean, I hope they're good. That would be fantastic. But let's hope for even better. Another is, I think, what I just mentioned, that I've got to have everything figured out by 30.
It's so
And
stressful, Meg.
it's
I
so
feel
stressful. It's
this.
just you're not going to turn into a pumpkin at 30. I think 30 is not a great time to start thinking about your life for the first time. But it's not also not realistic to think that I have to have everything, like the spouse and the house and the career and the kids and purpose and meaning and health and whatever. Like people don't have all that by 30. And I mean, that's life is a project. It's a long project. So that's another one. I think something I'm hearing more and more these days, hence the more recent book, The 20 Something Treatment, is that if you're struggling in your 20s, that you have a mental health problem, that you're broken or defective or deficient, there's something wrong with you. It's actually, for all the reasons I just said, extremely common to experience depression or anxiety and a host of other issues in your 20s. It's actually the most common decade of life to have these problems. And so it's very easy to meet criteria for mental health disorders when you're in your 20s for the reasons that I just described. So even if you can pull out the book and you say, I meet criteria for that, don't panic, that, to have kind of a growth mindset around it, that in general, as life gets better, mental health tends to get better. So a lot of the depression or anxiety that 20-somethings deal with, it's what we call situational. So it gets better as life gets better. Like, don't go labeling yourself for life, or deciding that you're fucked up. Excuse my French.
No,
Nobody's
please.
going to want you. Who would want to be with you? You're not cut out for whatever. No. You're just, it's normal to struggle in your 20s.
No, this is super interesting stuff. It is crazy because I'm relating to a T to all of this. And I'm sure the people listening here can relate to all of these myths because this is something that we tell ourselves and we hear from not only social media, but the world, our parents, university. I mean, we graduate from college and we're just put into the world and we have to fend for ourselves. And it's like, well, no shit, we're feeling all these things. And,
Of course.
and I'm grateful we're now living in a world where we are talking about mental health, where, people are coming to the mic and they're speaking and saying, you're not alone. But I think also at the same time, like you just said, there is for sure this balance of like not thinking you're like at the extreme or you
that you're
identify
broken.
exactly.
Right.
Like
You're not
this.
alone, but you're also not broken.
Yeah.
And a lot of this gets better. And so I really, really, in all my work with, it's sort of similar to people saying, do you think I can change? I assume that you will. And, do you think my mental health can get better? I assume that it will. And, believe it or not, that often comes from, more competence at work or better relationships with significant others or a better friend group or better coping skills. Like there's not necessarily something wrong with your brain as much as the fact that, it's difficult to be living with so much uncertainty. The brain does not like it. So it's responding in a way that, is and looks like depression and anxiety, but the less uncertain your life becomes and the less uncertain you feel about yourself, the less you kind of struggle in that way.
I really appreciated what you said about when you age or when you get older and you have a good understanding of right who you are, your values, your intentions, that you're happier. Do you think that there is that sort of correlation for us in our 20s for maybe because we don't fully know who we are yet or our values or needs that maybe there is this uncertainty about who we are
Absolutely.
and how we are navigating the world?
100%. That I think as people say, like, well, why are 20 something so unhappy? I don't understand that, people say this to me or in the media. And, my response is, what do they have to be happy about? Like, they don't have what we know from the research actually makes people happy. So, like, what makes people happy? Job security, financial security, the
Relationship.
personal say relationship security, sort of knowing, all those big questions. Will I ever be happy? Will I ever be successful? Will I ever be able to pay my bills? Will I ever have a family? When you're my age, I can answer all those questions. It's like, yep, I did get to have all that and I like it. So I'm generally good. But that's the opposite of what you have when you're in your 20s. I mean, I'm so sort of out of touch with how everyday people think about 20 somethings because I'm like the opposite of
Oh,
that.
yeah.
And so, but I was really stunned during the pandemic when so many people were saying, why are 20 somethings having such a hard time with the pandemic? Like, what could they possibly have to be stressed about? And I'm thinking, well, I'm waking up in my house with everybody that I love, who's super important to
With
me,
you,
is
yeah.
in my house. I'm still able to do my job, and which I know what it is. My career is not being, paused or slowed down or whatever. So I don't get it, Skylar, but that's me. And so I guess what I'm saying is I have a lot of empathy for how hard the 20s are. Fortunately, they're temporary. And I'm not saying, I'm not trying to sound like a downer about your 20s, but I have never, ever worked with someone, not one time in the 25 years I've been doing this, who did not say that once they got in their 30s, they were like, oh, thank God, this is so much better. Because you just start to have, like, if you think about it, Maslow's hierarchy or whatever, your safety needs are met. It's very hard to feel happy or satisfied when, like, your basic safety needs aren't met. And in your 20s, they're just not met. That's what all the uncertainty is about.
I mean, on every single level, like even looking now at the dating landscape is pardon my French, but fucked. Like,
Do tell. I mean, I've heard, but give me your specific thoughts.
yeah, I mean, women, especially for women, this podcast, there are men who do listen. Thank you, boys. But
Go
typically,
guys. I actually really
right.
love 20 something guys, I have to say. We could come back to that, but
I mean, I have a younger brother who's 24.
Well, I want to hear about the dating thing, but I do want to say quickly that when the Defining Decade came out, or when it was first being published, everybody was like, oh, this is a 20 something girl book. And I was like, oh, whatever, I don't know. And then it turned out it was easily as popular with 20 something males as females. And I think largely because they're not great at, talking to each other about their 20s or their parents or anybody else, occasionally a therapist. And so I have received so many emails from really, really endearing 20-something males over the years that just said that they had gotten so much out of the book and that they're really they're really struggling too. And I think they don't have as many places to go or talk about it or think about it. So I'm really glad they're listening to your podcast. And you need to find some of these nice ones while you're dating because they're out there. They email me all the time. But it sounds like you're not meeting them.
No, I couldn't agree more. I'm very lucky because I have a partner who I adore, and for me, like the process of like re-meeting him, I mean, I met him when I was maybe 20, and now I'm 26 years old and he's almost 28. But like we rekindled again. But again, like I wasn't ready when I met him the first time.
Oh,
And I
sure.
had to evolve. And now that I know more who I am, what I really want, my values, my needs, there is obviously a beautiful relationship that we have that's continuing to grow. But I am seeing, just especially for a lot of my girlfriends, just the dating apps and this like almost swipe addiction or people just wanting the next best thing. It's hard because it is scary as women, and this is what I wanted to ask you specifically for me, whether it has to do with relationships, dating, meeting the right person, having a successful career. And of course, like there is this thing of our biological clock. And this is something that I'm starting to think about a lot more as I get into my later 20s, where I'm like, fuck, how am I
Time
supposed
isn't
to?
infinite, right? How do I get all this
Like, how do
in?
I do it? And it's like, I know for me, I am a high achiever, and not that you have to be this way, but I do want to be, I want to create my own company and I want to like prioritize my career, but I also want to be a mom one day. And it's like, how do we not get overwhelmed by all of this happening around us for those listening who maybe do have a partner or don't yet? Like, how do we have everything and get everything that we want with this, like, feels like limited time?
Well, I mean, in a way, limited time can be useful, because it creates a sense of urgency that I think you do start to feel at 26 that you don't, and by you, I mean most 20-somethings don't feel it at 21. I mean, some people read the defining decade and they're like, "Oh shoot, I got to get going." Others read it and they're like, "I don't know if this applies to me." And then they read it again at 28 and go, "Oh my gosh." I think the urgency does start to really kick in more when people realize, like, "Wow, I'm closer to 30 than I am to 20. I've got to start thinking about the next decade." Normal, normal, normal. So, I think that's when people get more real about the choices that they're making in relationships or with jobs and start to think about, "Shoot, well, I need to." And if I'm into the whole kid thing, I need to think about when I would want to start that process. And that sort of forces some more kind of, as you say, radical responsibility around what am I doing with this year of my life? And how long am I going to stay in this relationship if I know it's not the one? Or how long am I going to stay in this job if I know I don't want to do it? I think when you're 22 or 23, you think like, oh, a wasted year or two here or there, big deal. Starts to feel like a super big deal when you're in your later 20s. And it kind of is, because that crunch time that sort of, I think, happens for a lot of people, and certainly for me, from like 26 to 36 was, I mean, if I don't even think I could remember what all I did from 30 to 35. So like you, I sort of re-met my husband. We met in our 20s, but this is what I mean. A lot of those defining moments happen, but they don't actually come to fruition till later. But we re-met, restarted dating at 30. By 35, at 35, I had our first baby. So in those 5 years, let's see, we met, we got engaged, we got married, we had a baby. I finished my PhD. Before that, I had to do my residency. So we moved cross country twice. And he went to graduate school in at night. And then at 37, I had my second baby. So, but in 5 years, all that happened.
Crazy.
So it's a lot. And
A
if you think
lot.
about what did I do between 20 and 25, I'm like, I'm not sure. I might have gone for
Yeah.
pizza a couple of times, but I don't really remember what I was doing. So there's just a major acceleration for all the stuff. But it's, I was never more productive or more focused or more successful than when I had a baby. I became more successful and more productive and more focused because I'm like, I don't have a lot of time. So when I'm at work, work's got to really count. And when I'm at home, home's got to really count. I'm not saying it's easy, but it actually helped me. And you'll hear a lot of women say this, that you will actually become sort of more, I don't know if like ambitious is the word, but just more productive and more focused after you have kids. 'Cause like, I don't have time to screw around. I'm either accomplishing something or I'm at home.
Whoa. It's so funny. My friend was just talking about this with me that, like, I think one of our friends, she had a baby and then she became so much clearer on her vision and like her career. And she
Right.
stepped into that. And Meg, thank you for this because I feel like every single day I'm almost in fight or flight, which makes sense because I'm navigating
Yeah.
the unknown. But
Right.
I'm also like, oh my God, I have to get there. I have to get there before I get married or have
Right.
kids. And it's
Everybody's,
this fight.
yes. I hear that a lot from men and women, maybe even more men, that they have this, feel this pressure. And I mean, all this is sort of very stereotypical and heteronormative, and
Yeah,
people come in all shapes and
of
sizes, but
course.
I do hear a lot from men of like, oh, I have to be completely settled in my career before I can even think about dating. And I'm like, whoa, well, that's kind of a tall order. And really, it's very linear. But we do a similar thing. I mean, I literally walked across the stage to grab my PhD diploma 9 months pregnant with my first baby. I was like, I'm getting this freaking
I
degree
love
done.
that.
And so I did do that, but then I was doing licensing. I had little babies, which is actually a great time to be doing that because I won't bore you with the details, but it fits very well with that. But it was in that time that I started, thinking about, shoot, I want to write this book. And I don't know. You just get this whole surge of purpose and activity, and just feel like I don't have time to fuck around anymore. So yeah. I think we were talking about early in the podcast, I wrote The Defining Decade. My kids were in preschool. I probably wrote a third of it at the bounce and play. Not kidding. Like while they were bouncing and playing, I'm over there on my laptop trying to get this thing written.
I feel
So.
like this episode has been like literally Xanax for me.
Well, good. No side effects either, so
I
that's great.
know. No, this could not have come at a better time. And it is interesting. I want to ask you this. Because I think we hear this all the time where it's like you have to be doing this, especially when we think about our career in our 20s. It's like you have to be making this sort of amount of money, but then you should be doing something that you love. So how do we know? Like when people say follow your passion, but also emphasize like the importance of learning and making money, like what does this mean for us? And like how do we and can we follow our passions, but also set ourselves up for financial su success and stability that we do want in our 30s? Like, is there a formula there?
Sure. I mean, I think
Yeah.
there's sort of a, Venn diagram where you think about interests and passions or
Yeah.
purpose or like whatever that word is for you, and then you think about finances and lifestyle that, somewhere in there, I mean, that may not entirely overlap, but there's going to be sort of an overlapping, category. Somebody told me once of what are we talking about? They said that I had passion privilege or something. And I was like, oh, what's that? And they said, well, it's just that your passion ended up being not lucrative, but that you can have a good career out of it. And I said,
Yeah.
well, actually, I think my passion when I was a college student was to be a writer. But certainly when I was in college, I mean, hello, this was the 90s. If you wanted to be a writer, I mean, this is like pre-internet, okay? You would literally take a bus to New York with your typewriter and try to like be a writer, okay? So like, who's doing that? I mean, certainly not me, just
No.
average middle class college student. So I actually felt I would, I did enjoy, I don't know if I had a passion for it, but I loved psychology, loved my classes, did well, felt like connected and meaningful, not like drudgery. But, I'm going to go in that direction. And then I've obviously followed that path in the way that I wanted to. But the writing really came about like from that was that I always wanted to be a writer, but even in college, I was honestly a better nonfiction writer. So it's like, well, I needed something to write about. I didn't have anything to write about when I was 22, even if I'd had the courage to take the bus to New York. So I guess what I'm trying to say is you may ultimately get to your purpose and your passions, but you may not be able to start, at 25 of like, I am doing that passion. Because it just, I couldn't have paid my bills that way. Let's put it that way. So I was thinking about like, well, I've got to get myself into and through grad school. I need to get bills paid. Like this, I've got to make it happen for myself. And then writing has come in through all that in that area, which I love. It's like turned out to be perfect. But I wasn't just like strictly pursuing a passion. I was being very practical about it because I had bills to pay.
I love that. I mean, specifically for me, I mean, I have a 9 to 5. I'm in sales for an influencer marketing company, and then of course, I'm also building this. But you kind of do have to be realistic about, okay, I do need financial stability, but at the
Right,
same
so
time, it's
you're
like not
living
black
it,
and
yeah.
white. Yeah. Yeah.
Right, so so it's like
Yeah.
that. Actually, people, it as a matter of fact, when I was the defining decade was being, kind of sold to publishers, like I was talking about, I got a decent advance. It wasn't humongous. I mean, I was like had never written a book before, and was kind of a, a risky bet. And I remember saying to one of the editors, like, I'd really love to get the size advance so I could just stop working for 2 years and write the book. And she said, I don't want you to do that because you're going to get lost in a rabbit hole. She said, I want you to be seeing clients. I want you to keep your head in the game. I want you to feel like, you're like pressed for time, but there's just often not helpful to be like, I've got 2 years to figure out my passion. It's just that's often not helpful. Like I said, I wrote The Defining Decade, a third of it at the Bounce and Play. And I think it was very helpful for me not to have been given this 2 year period to just luxuriate into my writing. I think it would have been honestly a less useful or successful book.
Oh, Meg, thank you for normalizing all of this. This conversation is so necessary because I want my audience to know that you're not alone and it's normal and healthy, I think. I'm wondering if you have any like specific advice for how we can maybe protect our mental space while navigating this uncertainty. And maybe not protect is the right word, but like any steps that you think we can take on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, well, you've got to start by reading The 20-Something Treatment,
Yes, I need to.
which is my newest one about young adult mental health. And it's very normalizing and very growth mindset oriented that it's normal for, your mental health and just your sort of personal well-being to be struggling. I mean, it makes about as much sense to say, these would be easy, amazing years as it would to say like your first month of college is going to be amazing, or your first week of first grade is not going to be stressful. It's like, well, of course it is. This is just this whole new, area that you're trying to navigate. So it's normal to feel stressed and overwhelmed and all that. I think that we know that, like I said earlier, 20-something mental health gets better when life gets better. And so, really, I mean, that means kind of finding competence at work, building good friendships, really being honest with yourself about what is going on with your romantic relationships and, what you see is what you get. And, you know, as Maya Angelou said, when someone shows you who they are, believe them and, you know, move on when it's not working and learn from that. And so I think that, you know, on average, we know that 20 somethings have 9 different jobs by the age of 35, and probably some similar number of relationships. And so to just realize that's part of sort of the building competency growth project that's happening there. And just to be honest with yourself about what's going on, what's working, what's not working, what do I need to do for my next one? So, you know, those are some general thoughts. But in the 20-something treatment, it's really about 12 or 13 different competencies, from how to work, how to think, how to feel, how to choose purpose, how to cook is in there. And it's just all about sort of areas to dig into that we know are good for your 20-something mental health. And it's all around developing competencies.
Meg, I'm going on Amazon and purchasing this today.
Oh, good.
Also,
And then we'll have a follow-up.
I would love that. And
Yeah.
also, I mean, I would love to have you on again and we can dig deeper into the 20-something treatment. And
Sure.
even within show notes, what I'll do is I'll link each of the books as well as your
Oh,
website.
cool.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So all of that will be there. I think really digging in, if we can get into one more section, because I know we're almost done together, but this
Sure.
is a section that I love to call syllabus steps. So I'm
Oh, I
curious.
love it. I'm a
Oh,
school nerd at heart.
right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I'm just curious from your, maybe even now being a mom of 20 somethings, and even from your personal experience, like for your syllabus steps section, are there any specific like daily non-negotiables or podcasts that you love, or maybe books that you recommend to your clients or your kids that you think my audience would benefit from?
Okay,
Of
let's
course,
see.
the defining decade in the 20
Yes,
something
well, of
treatment.
course, that's got to be.
Duh.
Oh, you know, one more, another one of my books. I'm sorry, I'm
Yes.
really not trying to just
No,
like
give
push
it
all
to
my
me.
books, but you were saying earlier of taking radical responsibility for now, no matter what has come before. You said something like that earlier.
Yep.
My actual closest to my heart book that I've written is the least well known, but it's probably the most, emotionally complex. It's called Supernormal,
Okay.
and the subtitle is The Secret World of the Family Hero. And it's not marketed as a 20-something book, but it's basically about young adults who grew up with every kind of adversity that you could imagine: alcoholism in the home, mental illness in a sibling, domestic violence, you name it, bullying, that, you know, sort of the 10 most common, who then are in adulthood going, okay, now how do I have a better life as an adult than the one that I sort of got stuck with as a child? And I think that's a real moment of radical responsibility and just incredible opportunity. I mean, that's what I love working about 20 somethings is it's all up to you now. And then I think oftentimes young adults who've grown up with adversity, they feel broken, they feel damaged, they feel different. And the book is really all about how 75% of young adults have grown up with some adversity. You're not, again, you're not as alone as you think you are. You're not as broken as you think you are. So anyhow, I really hope if anybody out here is listening and they identify with that, they'll read that book. This is a podcast that is such a wild recommendation, but I absolutely adore it. It's called Dead Eyes by Connor Ratliff. Have you ever
Okay.
heard of this?
No.
Oh my gosh, it is so fun and amazing.
Okay.
It's about he's a comedian and actor, but he's retelling a story from his own 20s when he was fired by Tom Hanks from this movie. And it w was a total monkey on his back for the next 5, 10, 15 years of this like early career failure that really, really got in his head. And he talks about it, believe it or not, over like 3 seasons, ultimately
Yeah.
culminating with Tom Hanks finally coming on to like unpack the experience. But it's extremely charming and relatable. And what I love about it is that it really unpacks something I think we all do, and that 20 somethings do too much, is they let the early failures like really fuck them up. And rather than just being like, whatever, you win some, you lose some, you know, which you're much more able to do at 45 than you are at 25. But I love how this podcast just really blows this up and helps people see, which I actually talk about a lot in the 20 something treatment about catastrophic thinking and how
Yeah,
everything is
it always
personal.
happening.
And,
It always
you
happens
know,
to me. Victim
yeah, so
mindset.
of course, that of course. And so I love this podcast because we can all relate. And I think it just really, really blows up this moment in a way that's very useful
Super cool.
and charming.
Yeah, I love everything you just brought up because again, it comes back to really the essence of regardless, like regardless of what has happened to me in my life, like how am I going to use those, sandpaper to the soul moments to grow, to learn, to show up. And even with the podcast that you just mentioned, Dead Eyes, like he probably didn't see this before, but like that experience allowed him to be vocal. Like his mess was his message. And like, look what he's doing with it now.
Right,
So
right.
I think this is just a reminder to anyone listening, like, regardless of what is showing up, of the uncertainty that you are facing in your 20s, you're not alone. And you
Right.
get to decide on like how you want to take charge of your life. Like, you are in the driver's seat.
I
Yeah.
love it. I love the title of the podcast. It's funny because
Oh.
people, you know, over the years have often emailed and been like, well, what about the pandemic? Or what about the recession? Or what about whatever? And I'm like, well, I mean, I'm basically saying, well, regardless, you've still got to do your 20s. Like, I know it sucks, but it's not going to help to like sit around and do nothing.
No.
So you got to find a way regardless. So I love
Regardless.
that. I love
And
that.
Meg,
Great title.
thank you.
Yeah.
Last question for you. It's a little game.
Oh,
Fill in the
cool. Okay.
blank. Regardless of blank, I am blank.
Gosh, regardless of what a recent person said to me who wasn't into this idea, I want to write a book about college.
I love
So,
that. I love that because
yes, I think
that rings true to your experience and it's so
it's just
personable,
this is the
Meg.
next thing I want to do. So, regardless of what whether someone else thinks it's a good idea or not, that's what I want to do. So, unfortunately, believe it or not, ultimately, when you're not in your 20s, you get to say things like that more often.
New episodes drop every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube.